Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Farmer Kumaris for giving me this chance to talk about my ideas. If you want to know more, go to my homepage and you will see a link to a paper that's been published recently, and I'm working on more things, but this is where we are at the moment. Okay, well, I guess my main point is that physics doesn't really understand life, and by taking proper account of life, we will be able to, there can be steps forwards, just as there was when quantum theory took over from classical physics. So I hope to be able to demonstrate that this is something plausible. But first of all, the situation as we have it at the moment. Quantum physics is what's supposed to be fundamental. It's a theory that gradually developed about 100 years ago. And the idea is everything really, that can explain everything. So for example, it does explain chemistry nicely. You can predict the properties of molecules. And then the idea is that we understand life as well. It's largely chemistry, special molecules which behave in particular ways, and that will explain life. Okay, well, I'm now going to explain why that is wrong, and why, in fact, life really should come at the bottom in a way, but once we understand life properly, that will then explain quantum physics. Okay. Well, you see, the analogy when one says chemistry, etc., can explain life, it's like an electronic circuit being explainable in terms of the components. But that explanation only works, really, when you have a precise specification. You know each component behaves, and you know what the connections are, and then you can predict precisely how a circuit will behave, and that's how you design your circuits. The trouble is, life isn't equivalent to that. Life has got, it's very variable. We can't specify exactly, well, we can say what the chemicals are, but we, to be able to do the physics, we need to know the precise state of each chemical and the relationships between them all. So that doesn't work. Furthermore, there's so much variation between one example, say one cat and another, or one human being and another, that you can't fit it to a general formula, which is what physicists like to do. So the idea of explaining things in terms life, in terms of quantum physics, is a little bit suspect. So well, how does biology work if it doesn't work by equations? Biologists seem to manage very well without doing the kind of complicated calculations that some physicists do. And the way they're able to do it is because they develop a specialized language. They're taking into account what you can do with language. So they describe things in their own way. They explore and discover things. A familiar example is DNA. DNA is something one knows about in general. It differs from one, well, even from one person to another, the DNA is not exactly the same. But still, there are general principles. There are two strands of DNA, and amino acids can join on, and so you can get replication. So there's a whole lot of things you can do in biology just using ordinary language without precise calculations. So, physicists or theoretical physicists like mathematical language. Biologists invent their own language to fit what they discover. So it's really a two cultures type situation. And the C.P. Snow said with two cultures, arts and sciences, they don't interact that much, or at least they think they do. Physicists sort of explain bits of biology, but not really how the organism as a whole works. And if you just put all the materials present in an organism together, and even maybe let them interact a bit, you still wouldn't get a working organism. So there's something about life which is different from what physicists know about. Now, you might say, well, this doesn't really matter. Physicists study matter, biologists study life, and it's irrelevant to physics. But perhaps that isn't the case. Perhaps biologists know some things that physicists don't. And the extra thing I'm going to expound briefly is that there's a special kind of organization in biological systems which is different from the kind of organization physicists know about. So certainly physicists talk about organization like crystal structures, magnets, superconductors, but this is a simpler kind of organization than what you get with life. So in other words, life is something beyond what physicists know. Now, so you might say that it doesn't really matter, that physics is okay, but there's one situation in which physics is not okay, and that's the problem of the observer. It's the thing which causes a whole lot of problems. You have one equation, like the Schrödinger equation, which describes how things go when they're not being observed. But when they're being observed, something else happens called collapse, which has a different equation. This is all rather mysterious. So there's a bit of argument as to how you might deal with this. So you could say for a start that this observation might be the thing where biologists have things to say. And of course, observation is something which organisms do, which supports that idea. Okay, well, lots of people have taken this up in various ways. What we actually have is essentially a number of different people have got bits of theory, and what's needed now is to put everything together. And once you put things together, you can get lots of new ideas. And one thing I'd like to mention particularly, because it's connected with observation, is a famous physicist called John Archibald Wheeler. He wrote an article, Law Without Law. He said there isn't really a law. Law comes into existence. His argument was as follows, that an individual observation, like when you measure the position of a particle, that does this thing called wave function collapse. Well, that's a very local effect. But perhaps if you have lots of observations going on, that might have a dramatic effect. And he gives us an example, making a piece of cloth. You do lots of things to the cloth, to the simple thing, the strand, and you end up with cloth. So he thought in the same way, nature observing things might be producing the kind of lawful behavior that we have in physics. However, he didn't have much of a clue as to how to do it. It was just an idea. So that didn't really get anywhere. But what there's this two cultures thing. He didn't know much about biology, and biologists have been busy working out all these things like observation, and there have been various ideas which I'll briefly mention, which have come out of theoretical biologists working away on life. So what's the first thing? Well, one is actually goes back to the 19th century, is the idea of meaning, or semiotics, as it was called then. It's called biosemiotics when it's applied to life, and that's about meaning. And how do you make meaning precise? Well, you say there's something which is a sign, there's something which the sign means. In between, there's a process of interpretation, and so that's a special process which makes these links, and you can study all that in detail, as he did. And some biologists, the biosemioticians, have taken this up and asked, how does this apply? Well, in any particular skill, certain things are meaningful. You have to take note of, when you're learning something, you take note of what is relevant to that thing. And there's a general organization. It's something like a flow chart or a strategy. There's also a strategy involved for things like learning language, or say learning to walk. So we had the idea of scaffolding. So something which supports what you're building. You're building upon scaffolding. So that's another idea that people have had in biology. And what happens is the scaffolding focuses activity. So instead of looking all around, your attention is focused on particular things, the things that are important for becoming good at something, like words in the case of language. Okay, so another thing which seems very important, and I think these all blend together, is the idea of coordination. There's something called coordination dynamics, which someone called Scott Kelso has developed in particular. There's an article I refer to in my paper by him. What's happening is that you make your skill, your function, by bonding together particular sub-things, agencies. The idea that physicist Karen Barad has also had. So there's this bonding process. And if you look at it, this is something different from bonding together with forces, which is what physicists know about. Take, for example, a flock of birds. The birds don't fly together because there's some force pulling them together. It's because each bird is informed about the position of the other. That's again what's significant in informing a flock, and respond appropriately. So this is something, again, that's special for life. Okay, now to continue about bonding, a very nice illustration is that of language, because for a start, language bonds people together. They do things together because they talk to each other and set things up. But even more interesting is that within language you have a whole set of processes which work together. Now this isn't just an airy theory, because someone called Terry Winograd, right? He did a computer simulation of it, so we know that bonding works. Okay, so I think I can put things together. Language is used to fabricate form, so that illustrates John Wheeler's ideas. It arises naturally from something simple to something very complicated. So here's something very important going on, and what we really want is to put all these ideas together, have experts working on them, and then we'll get this new branch of physics. So we only have, there's a creative process, so you might be able to bring religion into it if you wanted, or spirituality. We have only a general picture at the moment, but that's how new sciences always start with something simple, and people work on it, work out more and more details. So that's it, that'll be the new direction for science.